When a church or community faces overwhelming problems, when the issues are difficult and complicated, God calls on courageous men and women to take action. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll points to two quintessential models for leadership in the Old Testament. In partnership, Nehemiah and Ezra led an ambitious campaign to reconstruct the wall around their city. Today, we're turning to the last chapter of Nehemiah's book to begin our final study in Chuck's series called Hand Me Another Brick. He titled this final message, Taking Problems by the Throat.
One of the occupational hazards of leadership is the need to face, analyze, and solve problems. While supervising the construction of the ancient wall and later while governing the people of Jerusalem, Nehemiah had faced and wisely dealt with many knotty and complicated problems. You'll remember a lot of them. Now, in our final message in this series on leadership, we will observe Nehemiah as he addressed four critical problems from which we will draw several timely principles for our own realms of leadership today. So let's open our Bibles together to Nehemiah. And though it's a long chapter, I want to read much of it. It's in this chapter we'll learn how Nehemiah really got the attention of the Jews and appropriately took care of the sin in the land. Nehemiah chapter 13. On that day they read aloud from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, and there was found written in it that no Ammonite or Moabite should ever enter the assembly of God, because they did not meet the sons of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. However, our God turned the curse into a blessing. So it came about that when they heard the law, they excluded all foreigners from Israel. Now, prior to this, Eliashib the priest, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of our God, being related to Tobiah, had prepared a large room for him, where formerly they put the grain offerings, the frankincense, the utensils, and the tithes of grain, wine, and oil prescribed for the Levites, the singers, and the gatekeepers, and the contributions for the priests. But during all this time I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I had gone to the king. After some time, however, I asked leave from the king. And I came to Jerusalem and learned about the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah by preparing a room for him in the courts of the house of God. It was very displeasing to me. So I threw all of Tobiah's household goods out of the room. Then I gave an order, and they cleansed the rooms, and I returned there the utensils of the house of God with the grain offerings and the frankincense. I also discovered that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, so that the Levites and the singers who had performed the service had gone away, each to his own field. So I reprimanded the officials and said, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" Then I gathered them together and restored them to their posts. All Judah then brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. In charge of the storehouses, I appointed Shelemiah the priest, Zadok the scribe, Pedaiah of the Levites, and in addition to them was Hanan the son of Zakur, the son of Mattaniah, for they were considered reliable, and it was their task to distribute to their kinsmen. Remember me for this, O my God, and do not blot out my loyal deeds which I have performed for the house of my God and its services. In those days I saw in Judah some who were treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sacks of grain and loading them on donkeys, as well as wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of loads, and they brought them into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. So I admonished them on the day they sold food. Also, men of Tyre were living there, who imported fish and all kinds of merchandise, and sold them to the sons of Judah on the Sabbath, even in Jerusalem. Then I reprimanded the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing you are doing by profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do the same, so that our God brought on us and on this city all this trouble? Yet you are adding to the wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath." It came about that just as it grew dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut, and that they should not open them until after the Sabbath. Then I stationed some of my servants at the gates so that no load would enter on the Sabbath day. Once or twice, the traders and merchants of every kind of merchandise spent the night outside Jerusalem. Then I warned them and said to them, "Why do you spend the night in front of the wall? If you do so again, I will use force against you." From that time on, they did not come on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come as gatekeepers to sanctify the Sabbath day. For this also remember me, O my God, and have compassion on me according to the greatness of your loving kindness. In those days I also saw that the Jews had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. As for their children, half spoke in the language of Ashdod, and none of them was able to speak the language of Judah, but the language of his own people. So I contended with them and cursed them and struck some of them and pulled out their hair and made them swear by God, "You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor take of their daughters for your sons or for yourselves." Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin regarding these things? Yet among the many nations there was no king like him, and he was loved by his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, the foreign women caused even him to sin. Do we then hear about you that you have committed all this great evil by acting unfaithfully against our God by marrying foreign women? Even one of the sons of Joiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was a son-in-law of Sanballat the Horonite, so I drove him away from me. Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. Thus I purified them from everything foreign and appointed duties for the priests and the Levites, each in his task. And I arranged for the supply of wood at appointed times and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the book of Nehemiah with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insight.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck titled, Taking Problems by the Throat.
The life of Ludwig van Beethoven was a life that was of great ecstasy, marked and checkered at times by tremendous agony. Beethoven was playing the violin by the age of 5, and was doing a commendable job of it under the tutelage of his father, who was also an accomplished musician. By the age of 13, he was recognized by some as approaching a concert organist in the court of his day. By the time he had reached his 20s, he was already learning under the very watchful eye of Joseph Haydn and Mozart. In fact, Mozart said on one occasion that this man will give the world something worth listening to by the time he ends his life. And so it was. As Beethoven began to develop his life, he was destined to write during his lifetime some 9 majestic symphonies, some 5 concertos for piano, not to mention the numerous pieces of chamber music that have encouraged music lovers down through the years. He has written sonatas. He has written pieces for violin, piano. He has thrilled us with the masterful works of harmony that seemed, according to people who are in that realm, to break away from the tradition of his time. But Beethoven was not in any way a man without his difficulties. For lurking in the silence of his own life was a growing tragedy. By the time he was into his 20s, he began to realize he was losing his hearing, which is perhaps the most important gift a musician can sustain. His fingers became thick, he said on one occasion, and he could not feel the music as he once had felt it. It lurked in the shadows of his life, but he kept it a guarded secret. Only the quacks that he sought for help and a few physicians knew the secret of his life. By the time he reached his 50s, he was stone deaf. 3 years after being stone deaf, he made a tragic attempt at leading an orchestra, and he failed miserably. 5 years later, characteristically, he died in a fierce thunderstorm. Deaf, yet a magnificent musician, but he lived with that tragedy. He was heard on one occasion in the secrecy of his room to come down with both fists on the keyboard and to shout at the top of his voice, "I will take life by the throat," determined in those words not to give in. Many of his biographers feel that because he was a man of such great determination, he remained far more productive than most people normally would. He took life by the throat. Today, I would like to borrow that phrase from that great master of the keyboard, and I would like to apply it not to the realm of music, but to the Christian life. And I would like not just to camp on such things as physical infirmity, though there are some of you today that wrestle with some that perhaps are a secret known only by you and God. But I would like to apply it in a greater way to areas of wrong in our lives which we tolerate, which we refuse to take by the throat and conquer through the Spirit's power. Our main character will not be Beethoven, it will be Nehemiah, and the chapter will be the 13th of his book, the 16th of the messages we brought on this book, and the final one in our series. If you will turn with me to the 13th chapter, you will come across 4 great problems that Nehemiah took by the throat. He was determined not to let them conquer him or the people that he ruled over. There is a little verse tucked away in Romans 15 that says, "Whatever things were written long ago were written for our learning, that we through perseverance and comfort of the Scriptures that we might find encouragement," the Living Bible puts it. I want to glean from that verse the truth of Nehemiah 13. I want us to find encouragement and instruction from this great passage. Now, let me give you a little bit of background. Originally, Nehemiah was not working in Jerusalem. He was serving the court back in Persia, called in this chapter Babylon. He was King Artaxerxes' right-hand man as the cupbearer. He tasted the food before the king tasted it. He gave the king personal advice and counsel. He directed the affairs of the king in his own quiet way, so he was an important man as a cabinet member in the court of the king. By and by, he felt God would have him leave the court of Persia and go to the city of Jerusalem and undertake the construction of a wall. The king allowed him to do that, and he put on another hat. He removed the hat of the cupbearer and he put on the hat of construction superintendent. And he wore it for almost 2 months. He proved himself a competent leader and a very organized man. So much so that the people elected him, third hat, to governor. The governor of the city of Jerusalem. And there he stayed for an undisclosed period of time, establishing a righteous government. By and by, he left the city and went back to his first assignment as cupbearer to the king. According to verse 6, certain things took place while he was gone. It says in that verse, during this time, that is, the time described in verses 1 through 5, I was not in Jerusalem. For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I had gone to the king. After some time, however, I asked leave from the king. Now, the word sometime is that period that is not revealed as far as chronology is concerned. We don't know how long it went on. But while the cat was away, the mice did play in the city of Jerusalem. And when he came back to the city after being gone for some time, he discovered four great areas of wrong, which I am calling, for the sake of a better term, problems that he encountered and took by the throat. The first problem is revealed in verses 4 through 9, and it is the problem I would like to call the problem of a compromising companionship. To appreciate it, you've got to understand the main characters of the problem. Verse 4 introduces them to us. Prior to this, Eliashib, the priest, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of God, being related to Tobiah, had prepared a large room for him. Two men that we do not know a whole lot about. First is the man Eliashib. He is called later on in the chapter the high priest. He was responsible for the vessels and the rooms and the worship of the house of God. Eliashib had made plans in his office to set aside a part of the chambers of the house of God for the housing of Tobiah. Tobiah, historically through the book, has been the enemy of God. Nehemiah has faced him time and again as Tobiah tried to stop the building of the wall, as he criticized and attacked and assaulted Nehemiah personally. But all the way through, Nehemiah made sure that he never got inside the walls. Tobiah is the classic example of the rebellious unbeliever who tries every way in the world to thwart the work of God. But while Nehemiah was gone, Eliashib had said, let's prepare a room for Tobiah. You see, in those days, the house of God was different than the church of today. It was joined by chambers, large rooms, which often held grain or utensils or vessels of worship. And so Eliashib said, let's clear out the area normally given to this storage, and let's provide a nice room for Tobiah. Let's bring him in. And he has been put out long enough. Let's put him into the court, or into the chambers at least. If I read the verse correctly, verse 9 suggests that he had a suite of rooms. I gave an order and they cleansed the rooms. Notice the plural. Now back up to the story, verse 4. Eliashib the priest, who was appointed over the chambers, being related to Tobiah, had prepared a large room for him, where formerly they put the grain offerings, and then it describes them for us. And then Nehemiah says, I was gone, verse 6, and then he says in verse 7, I came to Jerusalem, and I learned about the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah. What did Nehemiah do about it? Well, that's a very interesting question with a far more interesting answer. Verse 8. It was very displeasing to me. I think that the writer of Scripture is careful to give us, first of all, his attitude toward evil before he tells us the action that he took against it. By the way, before I go any further, let me say that it is possible to have wrong in the Christian's life so long that he begins to tolerate it and finally begins to live with it. He no longer is displeased with it. I've had that happen in my life, frankly. I've allowed certain things to take place in my person or in my character for a period of time until I began to live with it, not completely comfortably, but fairly well, until finally one day God began to deal severely with me about that area. Now, Nehemiah came into the temple of God and he discovered that Tobiah was now living there, of all things, and he was displeased. What did he do? Verse 8 says, I threw all of Tobiah's household goods out of the room. That's remarkable how practical God's word can really be. And people who have these saints of the Old Testament with halos and untarnished robes and well-shined sandals have missed the whole point of the narrative. Nehemiah went into the room and began to dig out all the stuff and put it out in the streets. He began to clean it out.
If you joined us late in the program, you're listening to the final message in Chuck Swindoll's study of Nehemiah. This is Insight for Living, and Chuck titled his series, Hand Me Another Brick, Timeless Lessons on Leadership. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. Well, while you have a little extra time this week, why not spend a few minutes browsing the wonderful collection of gift options at our online store? By giving your friends and loved ones a devotional book or perhaps the Swindoll Study Bible, you're actually giving them a touch of God's grace. You can check out the gift ideas available to you when you go to insight.org/store. Well, it's impossible for us to know what struggles you might be facing today. We do know, however, that all of us go through tough seasons. Even so, God gives us grace for the moment. Here's Chuck.
Every single year, I visit the Cooper Clinic here in Dallas for my physical exam. I'll spare you the details, only to say that my doctor inspects every freckle and examines every blood cell, or so it seems. He misses nothing. Well, again, this year, I passed with flying colors. Well, with one rather obvious exception. I'm having some difficulty with my left eye. Can't seem to get everything in focus due to my struggle with glaucoma. And even though I feel like I'm 40 to 50 years old, my eyes remind me that is not the case. All of us harbor a few physical flaws, especially as we grow older. I'm sure you have your own stories. This one is mine. The Apostle Paul had his, you'll recall, and he gave a name to it. He referred to his as the thorn in the flesh. Gratefully, God comes alongside our blemished bodies. He compensates for us. He gives us fresh grace for each new moment in life, like I now need because of my eyesight. And I especially feel his presence every Sunday morning as I stand and deliver his word from the pulpit at Stonebriar Community Church. The messages I deliver come from his word, which I'm still able to read gratefully because of his grace. In addition, in feeling God's presence, I sense the support of so many of our faithful listeners, people like you. I can assure you, my sermons wouldn't be half as effective if it were not for folks like you who support us in prayer, who stand alongside us with their gifts, making Insight for Living possible. To this point, we are coming upon the end of the year. It's a final deadline for us this calendar year, December 31. So it's my opportunity to say to you, wouldn't you like to be a part of sustaining the ministry of this work? Wouldn't you like to play a major role in launching us into a new year as we make His truth known and share with others His grace that is all sufficient? What a wonderful way to end the year through a generous donation that you will provide. Let me thank you in advance for being unusually generous. Thank you for giving to our ministry today.
Thanks, Chuck. And by responding today, you can be the one who delivers a touch of God's grace to those in need. To give online, go to insight.org/donate. Or you can call us. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888. A reminder, you're invited to join us every Sunday for the worship service in Frisco, Texas. View Chuck Swindoll's sermon at the live time or when it's more suitable to your schedule. You'll find all the details for streaming the online worship service at insight.org/Sundays. I'm Bill Meyer, urging you to listen again next time when Chuck Swindoll continues his study called Hand Me Another Brick on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Taking Problems by the Throat, was copyrighted in 1974, 1983, 1990, 2007, and 2016. And the sound recording was copyrighted in 2016 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.